evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. It's 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock p.m., not a.m. That's why it's in the evening, right, Adam?
That's right.
I'm here with my long-standing partner, Adam Sunhalter. My name is Jack Mancini, and we have a coaching company called Maximum Value Partners. We deal with small business owners. We've been doing it together for 16 years, and we have seen just about every type of situation involving a small business that you could imagine. And what we do is coach the owners on how to be successful, how to make profits, how to really grow their company, and give them the secret as to how to do that. And along the way, we've encountered every conceivable situation that you can think of. Adam and I both own companies, have owned companies, sold them, bought them, assessed them, audited them, done whatever we had to do to move that small business world. And basically that's after both of us had careers in large companies, Adam on Wall Street and me as a vice president with a couple of publicly traded companies, fairly large. And we have fun doing this stuff. We put a radio show together that basically talks about items and situations, issues that we've encountered as coaches, as business coaches. And I'm going to talk tonight with Adam. I'm going to talk with Adam. I'll talk to him after the show. I'm going to talk to you after the show, Adam.
All right, Jack.
You know, what we have tonight, again, we create topics from our from the annals of our coaching companies and our coaching situations. And tonight, we're going to talk about this question. Have you thought about buying a company? You are a small business owner, and you're trying to grow your sales. You're trying to find good people. Did you ever think of buying a company? And when we pose this question to many of our clients, they basically fall back and say, oh, my God, I could never do that. And they truly believe they could never do that. So you know what happens? It never happens.
A self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. Very much so. But it's a great way to get sales and find some good people. Or if you don't have the necessary cash to take on a good company, that's where you're going to find more sales and I'm going to say profitable sales and good people. And you can buy a cash for little or no money down. It's going to have issues. That's why you can buy it for little or no money down. And we could teach you how to do that. But tonight we're just going to maybe touch on it with a few other items. We don't have too much time in our hour to really explore these in depth. But we should have a pretty good show tonight. We have a lot of fun with this, this whole subject, because we've done quite a bit of it. And we've coached a number of people, too, on how to buy companies with little money and how to buy good companies to find more sales, more good people. So we have lots of examples, and Adam's going to kind of kick it off in terms of what kind of stuff and how to be part of the show tonight and do his usual stand-up routines. And I say he's got stand-up routines because he stands all the time during these shows.
That's right.
And that's okay. I sit, he stands. Together we make a good team.
Well, if they're expecting stand-up comedy routines, Jack, they're probably tuned into the wrong station, although we do have a lot of fun with this because it's fun to talk about the dirty secrets of small business, and welcome. Thank you for joining us. If you're new or if you've been with us for a while, we're glad to have you here. As Jack said, we always welcome you to be part of the show. And probably the easiest way to do that is if you call in into the studio here at 440-946-9468. Again, 440-946-9468. We've got Jacob working the board tonight, so he'll be answering the phone. If you treat him nice, he might let you through. If not, we'll see what he does with you. But we can take care of you that way. If you want to email us, you can do that too at radio@maximumvp.com. And if you're a Facebooker, go look up our Dirty Secrets of Small Business page there on Facebook. You can send us a message that way as well. So lots of ways for you to be part of the show or to get into this. As Jack said, we're talking about have you thought about buying a company? And you know what, Jack? We're often surprised that there are actually quite a few people that have had that thought over time. And you were talking about one potential audience for this, which is, you know, folks who currently own a business and might be looking for ways to grow through acquisition, through buying a company, right?
Correct. So,
That's one. That's one definite category. Let me throw out a couple other categories, because what we're going to talk about tonight and address relates to all these. So if you're not a current business owner, but maybe you work for a small business, and you know that, hey, the current owner's there, and there's going to be some sort of transition probably happening here in the next, let's say, 5 or 10 years. Maybe you're thinking about, maybe I could buy the company I work for. Got some stories there we can share and talk about. Perhaps you're working for a big corporation, or maybe you're now a corporate dropout, whether that be voluntary or not. But you're, again, either currently working for a big corporation, or you just recently left the big corporation. That's a very popular spot to be looking for potentially buying companies. And if you've been out maybe looking to start a company, we contend, Jack, that there's fewer things harder than starting a company from scratch.
That's right. You don't have history. You don't have, the history or lack of it is the biggest challenge with a startup.
Right.
You can have test markets, and obviously you're going to go that route to keep proving your concept, but it's tough. It's tough when you don't, when you compare it to 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years history of a company. You can see all the warts, and you can identify usually objectively the opportunities. Much, much easier.
That's right. And so, whether, like you said, Jack, if you have a new company starting out, even if it's an industry that exists already, you're still kind of trying to, make some assumptions about customers. If it's a totally new thing where the market doesn't exist, or the market doesn't know about it, it can be very daunting.
More challenge, absolutely.
Versus your point, you got some history when a company's been in business for a while. You can look and analyze, understand what they do well, what they don't do well, if they're making money. Jack talked in the opening about companies that make money or maybe don't make money. And there's opportunities to acquire each of those. And you may scratch your head wondering, why would I want to buy a company that's losing money? Well, again, if you can figure out why they're losing money, how to get it turned around and start making money, that could be very, very profitable. We've got lots of stories to share on that front. But I think maybe where I start is, I'm thinking, Jack, is, again, I think a lot of people talk about this. And whether it be at cocktail parties or wherever it happens, we've met people over the years. I know you had one famous group in your mind that, it goes back probably 20, 30 years ago, people that you came into contact with through your CPA, who talked about, these guys had looked at some crazy number of opportunities. It was a couple hundred or something like that?
Over 200, right.
Okay. They looked at over 200, and these were guys that when they looked, I sensed that they were spending some time with each of these. It wasn't like, hey, I'm opening the paper, look at the paper. Oh, there it is. There's one. Well, no. They were spending time digging into it, analyzing it, right? I mean, spending a bunch of time with this.
It's actually like a career to them, to look at company. I mean, you almost have a modern day version with private equities and, looking at deal flow. It's not unusual for a small company like that to look at 400 or 500 companies a year, which mind boggles me. But these two guys were looking. They were looking to buy companies.
Supposedly, right? They were looking for years,
investing.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
So I bring it up, Jack, because I want to. One of our nuggets here in terms of, I guess you could call it a dirty secret, but in terms of something that people typically will often do is they'll often find reasons not to do deal versus finding reasons to do the deal.
Correcto.
And I know you had one that, very in particular, let's paint this for our audience here, Jack, in terms of the reason you became aware of these gentlemen wasn't because you were hanging out in the same area, just somebody that you knew mutually mentioned them to you. And they had an opportunity that your CPA thought might fit for you. So what was what was the opportunity in terms of why was it such a bad opportunity for these guys?
Well, he wanted me to meet these guys because I had just bought a company about a year earlier that involved the same market that they, who was were also a good client of my CPA. They basically were looking for this company, and he knew me. He knew that I had a company like this. So he basically introduced me to them. And they had an opportunity to buy. This company was making forgings, steel, big heated ovens, this kind of tough industrial Cleveland, Ohio type of product.
Right.
And there was a major company, a Fortune 100 company, who had a small forge shop in one of the suburbs of the Cleveland area. And this was the target. They were not target. This was the opportunity they were looking at. And this was such a good deal. I didn't kick myself because I was doing okay with my company. But this was such a sweet deal. It was unbelievable. This Fortune 100 company wanted to sell the company, which it eventually did to somebody, not these guys. And they wanted to take back the financing and provide the product that that Forge company was making for their own production. And they were going to give them a 5-year deal.
Now, hold on. So you said a lot, and I think people may have missed it. You said two key things here, Jack.
Okay.
The first word you're talking about was they take back the financing.
Yes.
So explain what you mean by that, because people probably missed that or don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Even though these guys had the means, the financial resources to do what would be a conventional deal, you know, so much money down or pay cash for the whole thing, whatever, they had the opportunity with this company to not put any of their own cash down.
So no money down to start with.
No money down.
Okay.
They didn't have to go out and scrounge up orders. They had this company, a very solid Fortune 100 company, who was going to buy the production of this, you know, with this company, because they used the production in their sales or in their manufacturing operation. So here they could get a company that was absolutely teed up for total success.
So it sounds like, I interrupt you again, Jack, but it sounds like they almost wanted to give it to somebody, right? I mean, you're saying that they're saying, hey, you don't need to give us any money. We'll finance this thing. You can pay us over a certain number of years. And to make it sweeter for you, we're gonna give you a 5-year contract to keep buying all the stuff that you're going to produce.
Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that?
Well, apparently these guys.
No,
these
that's
guys.
Right. They were finding reasons as they were talking to me, as I introduced to them. I said, my God, this is one of the better deals I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
I said, well, you know, they started picking on it. They found reasons. That's, Adam, why they were looking at 200 companies over 3 years.
They were professionals at finding the holes, huh? Is that
finding
what it was?
Finding the holes. And really, you know, it really came down to the fact that they, as far as I know, they never really bought a company ever.
Hmm.
And they're professional seekers of small business opportunities, or at least they say so, and they like to talk about these things. Hey, what are you doing here, Adam? Well, you know, I've been looking at acquisitions here, and just a matter of time before I get one. You'll never get one. You got to embrace the whole idea. When you see something like this, you just dive on it. You just do it. Don't worry about any shortcomings, and don't find so much negativity. Something like this is just, you know, rare. Rare. No money down, no guarantees. They're going to finance it. You just have to. They wanted to exit the business. They didn't want to be in that business, which is fairly common with big companies like that.
Sure. They get a bunch of things, and they often, those bigger guys often grow through buying other companies, like you said, Jack. And I mean, that's the strategy that the big guys use too. And often, yeah, they get parts of a company that they buy that they don't want anymore, perhaps, right? Or something that they were maybe good at producing, but now they aren't as good at it. So they say, that's not core to us. Let's kind of get it outside. We still need it, but we don't need to be the ones doing it or producing it, right?
That's right. That's exactly the reason.
And so that's a mentality. Thanks for sharing that, Jay. That's a good mentality to have, because, again, people are looking, again, they're looking for reasons not to do it versus trying to find reasons to, because what we see in our experience is you can always find reasons not to do a deal. And so if that's your mindset, yeah, chances are you aren't going to find a deal that makes sense. Even one like this, where again, they're literally trying to give it to you, plus give you a contract with guaranteed revenue. So it doesn't get much better than that, folks. But when we come back, I'm going to talk about a key thing that we talk about a lot as well, and that's making sure that you buy it right. So stay tuned here about that. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mencine.
You say yes, I say no. You say stop, but I say.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mencine. And how are you doing tonight, Adam? I didn't ask you that.
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, Jack. Thank you for asking. And I know you're doing fantastic as well. You got some good spaghetti and meatballs in you, which is always good.
I did. Dino's 2 and Willoughby.
Dino's 3.
Oops.
That's right. They know who it is.
Dino's 3.
Dino's
good,
the place.
Good Italiano dinner.
All right. So we're talking today about buying companies, right? Have you ever thought about buying a company? We're teeing up in the first segment talking about, you know, I brought up the idea of people giving it to you. And, Jack, you shared a great story about some folks who, even though somebody tried to give them the company, they wouldn't take it. And we use that phraseology a lot with people when it comes to looking at deals. And we'll often ask them that question. Say, look, if somebody just gave you this company, would you take it? And we usually
good question to kind of clear the table of all the nonsense and get right down to it.
Well, it's one of those questions. Are the reaction we get to that, Jack, usually it's kind of one of those, the people are kind of taken aback a little bit and they kind of smirk like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, it's almost like when I was like, do people do that? Right? Well, like you're trying to tell me something I don't, or a secret that I don't know? Or it's like, okay, well, yeah, it's your point. No, we're trying to cleanse the palate here and say, look, if they were to give it to you, because there are some companies you wouldn't take if they gave it to you. So you say, okay, just move
there
on.
There are some, yeah.
You move on. But the idea is you kind of, it's terms of buying it right. And one of the things that we often see, and maybe some stories of why folks maybe don't want to buy companies, Jack, is they've heard some horror stories about maybe a purchase gone wrong. And I'll share a quick story. One of the first people we met when we started the coaching company was a corporate dropout. And about a year and a half or 2 years before we had met him, he had bought a company. And this guy was in his mid-40s, was a super sales guy doing very, very well. He was a black man, and so he was looking at the company as having a chance for a couple of things. One is from a sales standpoint, he thought he could bring his super sales skills to it. He thought the fact that that he was black, that he was able to have some opportunities where he could tap into some opportunities that weren't available to the prior owner. And he thought, hey, this is a great business. The things he looked at, it showed very consistent. Again, this wasn't a huge company. It was maybe $500,000 or so in sales. And he looked over the last 10 years, and they were about $500,000 in sales every year, and they were throwing off a couple hundred thousand in cash flow. It was a nice, steady, stable company. He thought, hey, here's a great company. I can come in. I can take my fantastic skills. I can take my ability to be able to quote on some jobs that the current owner couldn't do because I have some abilities there too. And just could see all this growth kind of happening. And he kind of lost sight, Jack, of the key thing we're talking about here, which is in terms of buying it right. And there are a couple things that he did not so well, okay? A couple things. These are a couple things that are often very popular for folks as they think about stuff, things that they think might make sense. And so one of the things that he did was he didn't do his diligence well enough, okay? And so when you get into doing diligence, and you got a small company like this, you can get your hands around it pretty quickly. And one of the things that we discovered as we were talking to him is that, that $500,000 in sales, well, it turned out that about 40% of the sales, a couple hundred thousand bucks a year, was one customer, okay? So what fancy pants people often refer to as a customer concentration issue, right? I got a lot of...
I like those fancy pants terms, yeah.
I like to point them out before I say them.
Nobody understands what they're talking about.
Right. So it means I got one customer buying too much of my stuff, right? Not that I wanted to buy that much, I like to be able to grow around them. That's part of what this guy was seeing. He said, hey, that's a nice core customer to have. We can kind of build around and find more folks like that. But when I say he didn't really do his diligence well, he kind of knew that, but he didn't even talk to those folks. And if he simply placed a phone call to that customer or even gone to visit that customer, he would have noticed some construction at their headquarters with a building on the side where they were. The company that we're talking about here, what they made was wooden boxes for all different kinds of packaging. And so this customer was building their own little wood box manufacturer on the side of their business because they realized that, hey, we're spending a lot of money to pay for this packaging with this customer. It makes sense for us to do it ourselves. So they're building their own thing. And so wouldn't you know it, within a few weeks of him taking over the company, that big customer, 40% of the business, waved bye-bye. Hey, it's been great and it's been a good service for us. We have our own thing kind of set up. So he had that as what I might call like a strike one, Jack, right? Okay, that's a big hit.
Big hit, absolutely.
And closely tied into that was because this is such a big customer, and for those of you in manufacturing, but even for now, you can kind of follow this story. They have their material, right? This is a wood box manufacturer, so they have material of different types and kinds of wood. And so what was happening is with this big customer that they had a lot of scrap, right? Scrap for that big customer, but they're able to reuse and utilize that scrap for some other customers, right? And so as they were bidding jobs, they had some flexibility because if they're putting in zero for their material costs because it's free, right, because it's just scrap, they're able to bid pretty low for some jobs and get some jobs. Well, it turns out it wasn't just maybe one customer they were doing this for. They were doing it for quite a few customers. So keep in mind, he just lost 40% of the business, walked out the door almost overnight. And then attached to that with a bunch of the free stuff that was attached to that 40%, he lost another 20% of the business. right? Because it, you know, when he put in the price for the material, all of a sudden, if I was charging you $15 for that box, Jack, all of a sudden I got to charge you $30 for that box, and you're saying, wait a minute. You can't just double my prices, right?
That's right. So, yeah. Well, go on.
So that was kind of – is that strike 1A? I don't know. Maybe it's strike 1A because a couple other things are here. So strike 2. Here's strike 2. Now, again, people often think that when they go buy a company, one of the things I want to do, Jack, is I want to make sure that the former owner is there, that they're around, they're available for me, right? Again, very common thinking. Very bad thinking as far as we're concerned in terms of how this stuff tends to work. But here's why. So – whether this would have worked or not, who knows? But here's what happened. So he had a deal with this former owner. He put him on a contract as a consultant for a year. Okay, and they agreed to a price. And what happened was, somehow, the day the deal closed, that 1 year of consulting fees was paid to the former owner on day one. So that former owner showed up day one after the deal. And then never showed up again. Because that former owner had his money.
He had his money, and he didn't have an obligation to basically hang around.
So picture this, folks. I got what I thought was a nice $500,000 business, and all of a sudden we're doing maybe $200,000 of business because I lost $200,000 with my 40% customer. I lost another $100,000 of customers who were kind of tied to that with free material. And now I got $100,000 going out to pay this old guy that was part of the owner of the company, and he's not there. Now I got to chase him around. I'm suing him, trying to bring him to court and all this kind of stuff. So all the time and effort I was going to spend getting all these new sales kind of going on was all of a sudden tremendous, tremendous pressure, right? And so we met him. Like I said, this kind of all started to happen. We met him. He was in some dire straits. And then we said, well, who's helping you with this stuff? And here's where strike three came. He had a nice gentleman advising him who was from Princeton.
That's correct.
He was a nice professor, Ivy League professor.
Teaching a business class. So he didn't consult an attorney who would have, even an attorney, he certainly didn't contact us. We basically met him at the liquidation of his company. But, yeah, he made all the wrong moves. Didn't know what they were getting into. And there's a lot of people who basically do those kinds of things because they don't want to spend the money and time for good counsel and, do their due diligence accordingly. So they buy a company, and it's either going to go on the auction block, and in his case, it did, or they try to sell it. And they can sell it, or they will sell it, not as a premium. They'll sell it at a deep discount. And you'll learn from all those mistakes when you buy a company like that. If you don't have any guarantees, you're buying a company like that with no guarantees of yours and little or no cash into it. Now, is that a good deal? Well, if you're in the box company, it is. If you're pretty handy, man, a little company like that, that's almost a hobby-type company. But he had these big visions of grandeur and was being fueled by somebody who also never bought a company and didn't really even know how to really counsel.
And that's right.
That's what you get. That's what he got. Nothing.
And so we're sharing the story because how the story ended. I mean, we got involved and it was almost too late. We thought, hey, well, the bank must know something's going on because they had borrowed some money for a loan to buy the business, and the bank was like, yeah, we aren't worried about it because they've been making some payments and they had a gigantic table saw that they thought was worth close to $100,000, and the long story short, when it sold I think for $8,000.
Who bought it?
Well, no, that wasn't what somebody else bought that, but the former owner, I think you're talking about, the former owner came back during the auction. And if you've ever been to auction, you can visualize what that looks like. You got a guy talking faster than I do. Everything's got everything sold. Everything that's not attached is getting sold today, and you got to take it out today, right? But strolling in before the auction started was the prior owner, like that guy that was paid the consulting fee and didn't show up any time. Well, he showed up for the auction to buy back a bunch of stuff for pennies on the dollar, right? And so it didn't go very well. This was, again, we wanted to share this story because there's several points we want to kind of touch on. We touched on a little bit. I want to kind of dig in a little further, Jack, in terms of, again, learning about what not to do or what to do, however you want to look at it, in terms of we can learn from people's mistakes. But, again, it shouldn't spook you out of going to buy a company. Right, and so again, buying it right is the overarching theme. We hit on a couple other themes too, Jack, that I want to come back to when we come back from break, in terms of other things you got to be doing in terms of your diligence and advisors and different things like that that are very, very important to make sure that you're able to buy things right. So stick around. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini. And how can people get hold of us, Adam?
Yeah, you got 440-946-9468. And stay tuned. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. Where it began. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
Howdy do. This is Jack Mancini.
And we're talking tonight about buying companies, and we shared a couple stories in the first segments in terms of folks either finding reasons not to do deals or folks buying things wrong. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know? And so we talk about the idea of buying it right. We gave the example about it. Hey, if somebody gave it to you, literally gave you the company, would you take it?
Good question. That's a great question.
And it's,
why? Well, okay, you're going to tell us why. Well, why you're going to tell us, say why it's a good question.
Because people often will use an excuse of, well, hey, I don't have a pile of cash sitting around, Jack, to go buy this thing, or I can't get financing, or they'll find, again, coming back to finding reasons not to do the deal, one of the biggest reasons we see that people do not do deals is because they put it out of their own reach in terms of what they can or can't afford, in terms of what's kind of going on. And so the idea is, like, forget about that. Again, if somebody gave it to you, all of a sudden we've taken all that away, all those concerns about money and financing, everything. Let's take that away for a second and just look at the company.
It's a sheepishly answered, well, yeah, they gave it to me.
Right.
All right.
Well, now we can start because, again, if you wouldn't take it, they gave it to you, why bother starting? And so, yeah, maybe if you think about a scenario, you've got, you know, a long-lost uncle that this happened, or, again, you laid out a scenario in the first segment, Jack, talking about where a Fortune 100 company, that's a one heck of an uncle to have that wanted to hand off and literally finance it and provide sales as well. So there's different forms and fashions it could take. But we had a client years ago who had a business, had a partner in the business, and they wound up, you know, not working out in terms of their partnership, but they amicably, you know, broke apart. And this client was looking for something else. And it was thinking about starting a company. As I was mentioning before, we talked about people maybe looking to start companies. And we also encouraged him to look at buying companies, too, and just kind of turning over some rocks. And again, one of the things that we talk about, and maybe you'll share some of these stories, you know, in terms of your searches, Jack, because the audience, I think you told them, whether they heard or not, you've personally bought, fixed up, and sold five companies. And one of the things that you learned during that is you got to be pretty diligent in terms of what you do, in terms of setting some goals for yourself and say, hey, I'm going to make sure that I look at a company a day, or five companies a week, or 10 companies, whatever it might be, but start to get some goals out there in terms of turning over the rocks, as we like to talk about, right? To go look for stuff. And so while this client was starting up, they had a business that they had thought about for a while that was related to some medical supplies that they wanted to do. So they kind of got that kind of started, did a little bit of consulting stuff, and then it was, again, looking, turning over rocks, and turning over rocks for probably 18 months, just looking at some different stuff. And the guidance we gave them, too, one of the things people will often guide people is, hey, why don't you put together a nice little one-pager that outlines exactly what you're looking for?
That's a conventional advice that most advisors will give somebody looking for a little company.
Right. And it's completely wrong because it just
means nothing.
Right. It's usually you don't know. You don't know. And this is a great example of you just don't know. And we try to give him a sense in terms of big picture what he was looking for. Again, are you looking to go work 100-hour weeks? Are you looking to do – what are you looking to do? And what he said is, look, you know, I don't mind working 70, 80-hour weeks, but what I'd like to make sure I do is I don't want to do it with one company. I'd like to have multiple things I can be involved in. Okay. So I said, let's look at companies that would fit that bill. And so long story short, he found a company after about 18 months, and it wound up being in a space – it was a dental staffing company. Now – this guy's not a dentist, didn't go to medical school.
Well, how can you acquire a company if you don't know how to do the product?
That's what his buddies were busting his butt about. Say, what do you know about dentistry? He's like, hey, other than going every 6 months for the last 40-plus years, not much other than I know that there's a need for this, right? And the company he found was a company that had been around for about a dozen years, and it was founded by somebody who'd worked in the industry for a while and saw the need for whether it be for, you know, dental hygienists or for folks working the front or anywhere in between. There's a lot of folks that, you know, a lot of people that work in a dental office, and they have vacations, things come up, they need things to happen. Or they may be going through some growth. But anyway, there's needs for this stuff. And so what happened was that the owner of that company had lost a spouse recently. And as often the case when you lose a spouse or lose anybody tremendously close to you, often time seems to just get away from you. And so she described this as being a year after her husband's passing, this kind of was a blur. Woke up one day and said, hey, what am I doing this for? You know, and she was fortunate that she was in the position that they had enough financial wherewithal and insurance and things in place that you know, she basically was set for life. So all of a sudden, she didn't have any financial issues to kind of say worry about. So what am I doing this business thing for, right? And so she put it up for sale. And our client found her, and they worked on a deal where basically it was given to him. What do I mean by that? Well, they cut a deal, but it was set up to where, much like you're mentioning with this Fortune 100 company, Jack, that was willing to finance the deal. So this seller financed the deal for a three-year payout, where our client paid a monthly fee every month to pay this person off to buy the business. And that fee was coming from the business itself. The business was funding the purchase. And so it allowed the seller to walk away, not have to work anymore, but still collect money every month for the next 3 years. It allowed our client to get in there and start to work the business and see how things were going and learn about the business and do it on a part-time basis to start with. That's what he wanted to do, to learn about it and kind of get things kind of going. And it worked very, very well for him, but he was able to buy it right. He had some decent advisors. I'm not a tutor on horn, but we've been through this before to kind of give him some guidance, and I'll contrast that to whether it be our Princeton buddy,
right,
who was living in the ivory tower, or it depends. It could be attorneys and CPAs. And Jack, you had a great attorney advising you. That was probably one of the key guys for you when you were going through and very active in buying companies.
That's right. And single practice guy. That's right. Remember him well.
So if you have good folks kind of giving you real advice, and Jack mentioned at the beginning, and those of you who know me know that I spent almost 10 years on Wall Street, help people buy and sell companies and raise money for companies. And Jack, as you say, it's there were extra zeros that were there, but basically the process and things are relatively the same, and they are to a certain extent. If I use the word sophistication, is that the right word or not, in terms of just how the process works? With a smaller company, it's more of a Wild West than, it's a little more buttoned up when it comes to the Wall Street stuff in terms of just because you have a bunch of, very experienced advisors that are there. Plus, the companies I was dealing with, I wasn't dealing with necessarily companies that were doing a couple million in sales or 10 million in sales. It was hundreds of millions or billions in sales. And so as part of that, you have a sort of sophistication of management that's there as well. In terms of, it's a very different marketplace versus an owner of a small business who's owned his business or her business for the last 30 years. And that's what they know. And they've never done a deal before.
Right.
All right? So you got all kinds of emotions. If you're a CEO of a big company, you're still the shareholder. You may be a shareholder because you have some stock in the company, but it's not your baby. It's a whole different ball game. And so how things work in the small business environment, it's a very, very different marketplace. And a lot of it's emotional involved in terms of...
Big part of it is, yeah.
On both fronts. And so one of the things that we advise our clients, and we talk about the whole idea of buying it right, I mentioned this about being diligent before and how the guy buying the box company didn't do his diligence well. Now, let me clarify something. So we are also big fans of not spending a lot of time doing diligence up front. And the reason for that is until the deal is yours, you don't want to spend a bunch of time on it. Right? And so we had a client early on that we helped buy a company. This was he called it a corporate dropout. He worked for some smaller companies, but he'd helped kind of get them turned around, and the owners benefited very well, and then they patted him on the head, said, thanks for your help, and kind of sent him on his way.
Right.
And so we did that a few times. He's like, okay, I'm not, fool me once, shame on me, and then, I'm going to look my own thing. And so he knew what to do once he was running the company, but he wasn't sure how to go about buying it. And he was, as we talk about in disc parlance, he's more of a D, very dominant, driving demand kind of guy. So we gave him some of this advice, and he was a little bit skeptical. And so he literally spent 100 hours this one week analyzing a deal.
I remember that, 100 hours, 100 hours.
All kinds of spreadsheets and market research and things that he did to kind of just get to know that business really well.
That's right.
And we said, okay, so when was the letter of intent signed? He goes, what do you mean? I haven't even given him an offer yet. Well, so what the heck are you doing spending 100 hours on this one deal? Oh, it's going to work. And all of a sudden he kind of fell in love with the deal. All right?
One of the big sacrileges that you can get involved with. There's a lot of little trap doors in these things. That's one of them.
And so he went and made his pitch and said, here's what I'm willing to buy or pay for your company. And they laughed him out and said they sent him on his way. And he spent so much time, he tried to then negotiate again. So part of what happens, and part of the reason we say this, I mentioned the whole idea of it being emotional. So it's going to be emotional for the seller. It's their baby usually. It's often, you know, whether they birthed it from the startup or they took it over at some point, it's an emotional thing. And when it comes to negotiations, if you're emotional, it becomes very difficult to negotiate. So part of your job as the potential buyer is to not be emotional.
That's right. Don't step over that line. And, you know, not until everything is locked up and you've got the deal pretty much.
So as you might imagine, folks, somewhere between 0 hours and 100 hours, you're going to cross that line, right? That may not be 10 hours, maybe 20, maybe it's 50 hours, but certainly by 100 hours, you spent some time in this thing and you're into it. You're seeing it. You're seeing the marketplace. You're seeing what you would do with it. You've crossed that line, and that line may even be out of your rearview mirrors. You're so far over the line, right? And so you got to make sure you don't spend too much time on the stuff up front to make sure you can see things. I mentioned turn over the rocks. You can see a bunch of things, and you can start making offers on stuff. Because usually what happens is people often in the small business marketplace, they'll actually put a price tag on the business. Hey, I want $1 million for this. Okay. So the question becomes, okay, is it worth $1 million? Again, would you take it, they gave it to you, great, and they want $1 million. So where do you start?
How do you reconcile those two places, those numbers?
So trying to figure that out and trying to know where you sort of kind of value, but be able to kind of throw offers out there and kind of see what's happening. And it's not too different. Maybe a good analogy, Jack, is if people can maybe relate more to this in terms of maybe selling a home. Because I think more people have probably been involved in the buying and selling of homes than have been involved in buying and selling of companies. But a lot of the emotions can be the same. And so chances are, if you've tried to sell your house in the last year or two, you probably haven't had this issue because things are selling so quickly. But there are times when you put a house in the market and it sits there for days and weeks and months and you get no nibbles, no offers. Finally, you get an offer. Doesn't matter what the offer is. You got somebody who's interested. So you're there. You're all attentive, all excited and ready to happen. That happens with companies too. You know, you're trying to figure out why is somebody trying to sell. So maybe they're trying to sell the house because they got a change in jobs. They're moving out of the area, right?
Never know. Yeah. You never know the reasons. There's all kinds of reasons. Absolutely.
And so you're not quite sure why they're trying to sell the company either. You're going to help. You should be able to find this out and figure out what's driving it. But it's if you give offers, that's usually starts the discussion because often the number that they said, hey, I want $1 million, whatever the number is going to be. They often can't support that number either. So it has a little back and forth in terms of what you think it's worth. But again, the idea of trying to buy this thing and buy this thing right is very, very important. Because we've seen so many opportunities where folks have been given companies. There was a guy working for a big company. Things had slowed down. He got a little side job doing some machining, and then he got busy at work again. And he had some clients in the machining thing, but he couldn't keep doing that, so he basically gave it to a client of ours.
That's right.
Same kind of thing. Hey, you pay me X dollars for the next 24 months, and it's yours.
If you're turning over rocks at a pretty good pace, you're going to find these. They're there. They're always there.
They are. They are certainly there. And so it's part of it is kind of trying to follow some of this advice, which is often what I would say a little more. Again, it's not as typical. You come back to like the whole idea of the one pager. Ours is based on experience, not the fancy pants stuff and what you learn in school or in ivory towers. It's based on real rolling up the sleeves, getting out there in the marketplace for how these things kind of happen. And so there's lots of ways to make it happen. But it's very key. Again, buying it right is very, very key. Not spending too much time getting too emotionally involved is very key. And, you know, again, finding reasons to do. So there's lots of things you got to be doing, and good advisors are good folks to have around. There's other things you should be doing as well as you kind of look at this. We have a couple other stories we wanted to be able to share, and we'll do that when we come back for our last segment. So stay tuned. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini.
And stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT, 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini. Who was that? Who was that lead in?
Well, that was a good guitar riff, though, wasn't it?
Good drum. Good bongo.
Like the drum? See, I'm listening to the guitar riff.
Yeah.
Funny how that. So you listen to the same thing, we hear it differently, Jack.
That's right.
It's a great life lesson, isn't it?
Adam, you've been talking about this little quick test, if they gave it to you, would you take it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what we're implying there? Is that you got to get out and you got to turn over rocks, okay? Turn over rocks means looking at lots of companies, not be bound by a paper where you're only going to look for something that some company that produces some widget or some company that has this service. You're going to be looking at opportunities, and you're going to be shocked at the kind of things you find. But what we're saying, when we say if they gave it to you, would you take it? You can pull together an offer sheet, a non-intentional or a non-binding letter of intent, and you can make the offer in that non-binding letter of intent or a verbal discussion with them, an offer which basically would give you the equivalent of getting the company for nothing or no money down or guarantees on your own. In other words, you structure that letter of intent or an offer basically indicating that you will not guarantee and you will not pay money down. And you can do this with a company that's in trouble. Those opportunities are there. But you get the equivalent of getting a company for nothing if you buy it right. That's what we're talking about when we say that.
Maybe I can draw this. Afraid of using fancy pants terms. I don't think these are fancy pants terms. Maybe they are, Jack. So there's two things that we're talking about here in terms of a deal, right? There's the price, and there are the terms. Price and terms, right?
Price, terms, and guarantees.
Well, okay, but in terms of...
But, yeah, go on. Yeah, the guarantee is secondary.
In terms of what it looks like when somebody gives it to you, because, you know, again, this... come back to the dental staffing company, and you can share examples of your stuff too, Jack, but our client met the price ask. Yeah, the owner wanted X dollars for the business. He said, fine, I'll pay X dollars for the business. Now, most owners, when they're looking to sell, say, I want X dollars for the business, and I want cash today. That's the terms. I'd like cash today. Well, which one's more important to them? That price that they've listed, that million-dollar price, or more cash today? What's more important to them? And the reason I'm thinking about this, Jack, is you're talking about the idea of putting together this non-binding letter of intent, which is you're going to help smoke that out from them because they both can't be equal. One's got to be more important to that person. And so if you picture structuring the offer, hey, I'm gonna meet your price, Jack. You're asking for $1 million? Got it. Here's $1 million I'm offering you. But now what I'm offering, I'm not offering $1 million today in cash. I'm offering $1 million plus I'm going to give you terms. Well, I'll pay you out over the next 5 years and, you know, monthly increments. And I give that to you in writing. So what happens? You send it back to me, marked it up, right? What are you going to mark up? You're going to raise the price because I've changed the terms on it? You're going to change it? You're going to do something here,
yeah,
right?
That's right. But puts something's the burden gonna, back on you or the seller.
Yeah, but something's going to happen where all of a sudden I have a sense of what's kind of going on. And a phrase we say a lot, Jack, is what you don't want to do in any case, especially we're talking about a deal case, is you don't want to negotiate with yourself.
Right. That's also very important.
And so until you get to the point where you put the offer out there, all you're really doing is negotiating with yourself to a certain extent, right?
You adjust and you do things. You keep rethinking and you're trying to think for the person across the table from you, and you can't. No one I have not heard yet, except for maybe a magician or two, who's been able to understand what people are thinking before they say it. So
they're pretty good. So one of the areas I mentioned at the beginning, I haven't touched on yet, I wanted to kind of come back to it, because we have a number of people that we know, Jack, that have done this, where they're working for a smaller company, and they become the one that winds up buying the company. I've got a couple of clients that have done this recently. One did it probably 5-6 years ago, where, you know, been in the industry for a while and worked at different companies, and finally got to the point where the company that he was working for could just see all things that were being done wrong. And the reason why I bring this up is a great opportunity, because if you're working for a company, you're inside the company. You know pretty much all the goods and the bads, and you probably have an idea, whether it's a mental checklist or you've got it written down, of all the things that if I was the boss, I'd be doing it different, Jack, right? You know, all these things, ways to improve and grow and whatever it might be. But yeah, the boss isn't listening, or I don't have the influence. Okay, but I can see things that I can do. If you're starting to see that, where there's an opportunity, hey, I can see potential for this business. And this one client had a chance where he could see it. The company where he's working for is maybe doing $250,000 in sales. Like, hey, this thing could be so much bigger, do so much better. We can just fix some of these things. Also, we can do so much more work. And so he wound up buying out the former owner, did it in the version we're talking about in terms of paying out over time. But within a couple of years, grew that business 4 times what it was when he bought it. And as you might imagine, that wasn't enough. Hey, it was good. Can I get that thing to that point? And hey, I want to go buy some more. So where this was a company doing $250,000 when he bought it. He went and looked for another company. This one was doing $2 million, a little bigger deal, right? But a similar type thing where he could see, wait a minute. And what happens when you go get engaged and talk to people, the owner he was talking to said, look, yeah, I'm keeping the business at a lower level for a variety of personal reasons in terms of lifestyle, what the person was doing. Hey, this is a nice level for me. I don't want to grow it. I don't want, again, it's providing the lifestyle that I want. But hey, if you want to come in and buy it from me and you want to grow, more power to you, right? So he went in, and what may have looked like he may have initially overpaid for it, right? Not necessarily buying it, right? Well, if you didn't understand what the possibility was, they said, look, he said, I can get this thing to where it's doubled in the course of a year. And wouldn't you know it, month 11, sales were double what they were when he first bought it. Right?
Go on. Continue that story.
So, and then he went and bought another one. Same kind of thing, because he's out there turning over different rocks looking at things. But my point is, it all started from an employee who was working for a smaller company and was looking around and seeing opportunities that were there, and then going and approaching the boss, say, hey, I think I can do this thing better. I'd like to talk about transitioning. They can see the time was right. The boss is open to something like that. Whether it be for age reasons, health reasons, whatever it might be. Like, they're ready to kind of walk away.
You don't know unless you engage, unless you ask, unless you put forth that effort.
That's right.
There are a bunch of reasons why to do it or why not to do it.
That's right.
Most people choose why not. So, I don't know how to make this product or service. I don't know how to do it, so why should I even start?
Well, let me go through this. So you
There's
bought
always it. somebody in that company.
The companies you bought, Jack, you had an armature winding company, you had a railroad track construction company, you had a couple metal bending and forging businesses. These are all things that you can understand or talk about at a high level, but we're not putting you out on the factory floor to do this stuff. God forbid.
I wouldn't know how to ignite the furnace.
Yeah, it'd be dangerous for you, dangerous for people around. That's not the expertise that you're bringing. And it isn't necessarily the expertise that the folks bring who buy the company and start to run it. Again, this example I'm giving, I had some knowledge about how these things work, but the business side is what they could see. They could see, getting systems in place to improve how things were being run, to have financials in place to see what's kind of going on, to have a marketing plan in place to be able to kind of grow. They could see these opportunities. And it's one of those, again, I'll call it very underutilized or maybe not even seen at all, where you've got, again, if you're working for a smaller business, we'll define this small. Again, we look at 1 to 25 employees. That's usually anywhere from maybe $250,000 in sales to maybe $10 million in sales. So if you're working for a company that's like that, why can't you be the one to buy the company when the owner's ready to step
sure
back?
You sure can. But those opportunities, there's very few people who look at it like we do, and therefore there's the conventional wisdom stays in a state that is certainly not what we're advocating. There's very few people who look to buy companies like this, and it's out there. It's out there for anybody, and we have fun doing it. We've coached not only have we done it ourselves, but we've coached other people to how to do this. And that's to buy companies for little or no money down. Buy them right. Don't worry about it. You do your due diligence right, and it becomes a home run.
That's right. And it's true for no matter what state you're in. We talked about those at the beginning here, Jack, in terms of somebody that already currently has a company and is looking for ways to grow, either to grow their current base or maybe get into a new service offering. You mentioned, you may find some good employees that way, too. There's ways you can do it to add on to your current business. It's a great way to start to grow that most people aren't even considering or thinking about as a possibility.
They just don't think they can do it.
Think they can do it. And if you're working for somebody, you often don't think. Maybe if you're, again, come back to the corporate dropouts. Again, when you left corporate America, your thinking wasn't that, I was going to go do this. You happened to get involved with small companies, started your own company, and then all of a sudden you started to discover this market. And they started pushing you.
That's right.
Smart corporate guy, why don't you see what it's like to run a company, right? And you said, okay, well, so you took the challenge up. So it can come in a lot of different ways in terms of how it gets presented to you, in terms of what the opportunity is
going to
be.
It can be full-time or part-time, but the effort has to be there. It's just not going to come to you with one a month and looking and talking to people who really don't know what they're doing, don't know how to counsel and push you and get you encouraged.
So we got about a minute and a half left, Jack. I want to just kind of run through real quick again in terms of some of the key takeaways here that we kind of talked about in terms of making sure you buy it right. Okay, that's a big deal.
Yes.
When you're doing your diligence, don't spend too much time out there. Get in the habit of making offers. Right. Put out what we call a letter of intent. Making offers for purchases to get that off the market so it's yours. They can then spend 100 hours
in diligence.
Yeah, looking at those things.
Right.
find reasons to do it. Find reasons to be able to go do the deal versus find reasons not to do the deal. Because you can always find reasons not to, but really find reasons to be able to kind of go do this deal.
And with that, the word engage. Make sure that you are engaging. Look at bars and restaurants, even though that may not be how you start, but it's amazing how you connect to other opportunities when you start talking.
That's right. Turn those rocks over. Turn them over. Make those offers. And the price versus terms we talk about a little bit, but you know, again, don't get emotionally involved is a big part of this in terms of buying it right. But it's a lot to it. We covered hopefully a lot tonight. Hopefully, no matter what state you're in, you're thinking about this as a possibility that you can actually go do this. All right. So we appreciate you being joining us for this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We invite you to tune in every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions before, give us a shout at 877-849-0670. You can email us at radio@maximumvp.com. If you missed any of today's show or any of the prior shows, you can get them all at our website, dirtysecretsofsmallbusiness.com. Or if you're a Facebook person, you can get our Dirty Secrets of Small Business, Dirty Secrets of Small Business page on Facebook. Or you can subscribe to this on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast player is going to be and get it there and deliver it to your smart device. Hey, learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Hey, thanks for listening on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. We'll